What's up?
Here we are. I'm on that cold brew life. I'm on that iced coffee train. Andrew, what you on?
Oh, God. I didn't realize how much goddamn iced coffee. This is the most wild out we've been in a while. I have a piece of ice that's too big for a cup.
It won't go in there. We have to take a
check
picture it, of
check
this.
Our Instagram.
This is the most wild piece of ice I've ever seen. And then just a bowl of dry nuts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you got the LaCroix on the side just waiting patiently mm-hmm. for its chance.
And humongous coffee. We're going to be dead by the end of this episode.
Oh, my God. Well, anyway, welcome to our funeral.
Yes. Our pre-wake.
Tom Sawyer style.
Oh, yeah.
Where we watch ourselves be dead and everyone talks about how great we were.
Mm-hmm. We probably either say the N-word a lot or not at all, but it feels like we do. What else is true about Tom Sawyer and us equally?
Love whitewashing fences.
Mm-hmm.
Love
whitewashing everything.
Truly. Ooh. I mean, you know, let's get the color out of here. No, we're doing good. We feel great.
No, we're not.
We're doing great.
All right, fine.
We can't start every episode being like, ugh.
Oh, that's true.
Things are tough.
Good energy today.
When I feel great, I'm going to say it. And mm-hmm. there's nothing you jerks can do to stop me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's 100 goddamn degrees in Los Angeles today. I know most of y'all don't care because you're like, you guys get good weather all the time. Shut up. I live on a literal iceberg under the sea. Fuck you. That's what you guys say to us.
The berg.
And I would just say that I will take cold over hot most days.
Oh, every day.
Is that a crazy thing to say?
I don't know. I think we're from a little more north, both of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's too hot.
Like, I want a bundle. I don't want to.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because unless it gets very, 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 very cold, the cold is largely addressable.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, when it's this hot.
I have a bone to pick with you.
Yeah.
I'd like to address you, sir.
I mean, you can do shit about it. You can warm up a little bit within, I guess, limits. I don't know.
This is the part of the show where we do the thing, we practice things we talk about with our dads.
Did we introduce ourselves?
This is Yo, Is This Racist?
Oh my God.
The podcast where we talk about the weather
yeah.
in preparation for our dads going, I saw it was 100 degrees in Los Angeles.
Oh, it's hot.
And you go, yep, dad, that's what it does here.
Andrew, it's hot.
And then
make
he goes,
sure you stay cool.
And then he looks up the other places you've lived and he goes, I saw it was only about 75 in Chicago. Bet you wish you were back there. And
yeah.
you go, yeah, dad, that'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sit in silence for 2 hours.
You know what I like, actually? You know what the nicest weather is?
Hmm.
Inside of a podcast studio.
Oh, yeah, baby. Climate controlled.
Mm-hmm.
What a beautiful microclimate.
I mean, we're part of the problem ultimately, but...
Oh, because
we good
of the
right
air conditioning.
Now. We good right now.
Whatever. They got rid of all the straws in this fucking place, so I guess we're saving something.
Yeah. They also got rid of cups that can accommodate the normal ice size they have. So
I have a question.
Yeah,
before
please.
We get to the racism,
mm-hmm.
how come
uh-huh.
Starbucks gets to keep their plastic straws?
I mean,
everybody else is punished and shamed when we complain about it because of dolphins.
Are they actually punished?
Everywhere else doesn't have them, but Starbucks, they still got their little green plastic straws.
Hell yeah. Good job, Starbucks.
Who'd they buy?
You've never done anything wrong. Is it a law, the paper straws thing?
I don't know. I just know it's an inconvenience for me.
I have to be honest. I don't think I don't use that many straws in general.
Well, good for you.
I just think I don't drink straw-y
We're
liquids.
Gonna find out that those paper straws are killing somebody, too. Just wait. All you smug people.
Well, that's why after I finish my paper straw, I just eat the whole thing.
This is the podcast, Yo, Is This Racist, where we try out a loose 10 minutes on weather and straws. It's kind of like an open mic.
Yeah, for your, without all the talent.
Yeah, for your medium funny office friends.
Oh, boy.
No, this is a podcast where we talk about racism, but we stall a long time in the beginning because the news can be depressing, I guess.
Yeah. It was not super depressing this week.
I'm Tony Newsom. He's Andrew T.
Yeah, sure am.
Wait, I have personal news.
Oh, Tawny News.
Yeah.
The Tawny News segment begins now.
Do they still do that music in news?
Yeah, I think, isn't that just like a secret like Morse code for like help? Help.
Help. We're trapped in this fake journalism career.
We'll never leave.
No, I went to see a fantastic play. This is a plug for my friend's work. I went to the La Jolla Playhouse this weekend. So if you're in the San Diego area.
We love San Diego.
I don't. You're doing a joke.
Yeah.
You're doing a classic Andrew joke.
I hate San Diego so much.
It slips further and further down in my esteem. And this last time I was like, I don't think I ever need to come back to this fucking place.
But if you're one of the good ones in San Diego or near it.
And you want to see an excellent play written by, directed by, and starring all people of color. And it's not necessarily about race. It is a fantastic horror comedy rom-com called Put Your House in Order. It's by Ike Holter, fantastic playwright from Chicago. Lillian Brown directed it. Shannon Metesky and Behzad Dabu, great actors who are in it. It's fantastic. And it's 90 minutes long, and it's funny, and it's great. So go support some, you know, good people doing good stuff. Anyway, I went to the opening of that. It was a fantastic time. My friend and I got mistaken for actors from Pose. Yeah. We got mistaken for MJ Rodriguez and Billy Porter. Very flattering. We are not those people. We don't really even look like
not
those people.
That close.
These white people were so sure that that's who we were. They were like, we saw you before the show at the bar, and now we're seeing you here at the after party. This is who you are, isn't it?
You guys love the theater.
You guys love the theater because you are these people.
Oh, boy.
And we said, no, we're not. And they were like, we watched the show. We love you on the show. Like, they were giving us the knowing, like, you're trying to be coy, but it's you. We kept saying no. And then my friend, who's a full fool, my friend Sean, just then started voguing because he was like, let's just fucking confuse these people.
Yeah.
And so then the rest of the night, every time we would get drunk, we'd just be like, or get a drink, would be like, the category is. It was a good bit. But anyway, San Diego people suck. Also, another friend of ours named Aaron got mistaken for the playwright by someone who worked for the theater.
That's so rough. This is...
I was like, you work here.
Some steps forward, many steps back.
But
that's the city of San Diego.
Yeah, because there's not a lot of black folks down there. So I guess when you see us, you guys get real excited and you think we must be.
You're all the black folks.
The three you've heard of.
Yeah. Right. Well, but that's the crazy thing is those are the good San Diego people.
Are they?
They went to a goddamn play.
They did go to a play by a playwright they likely had not heard of.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Anyway.
Oh, boy.
I was like, I'm glad those white people are watching Pose.
Yeah. I know. It is like a be mad at them and then probably grading on a curve.
Yeah.
Grading on a curve, they're like probably some of the best people in San Diego.
Honestly, yeah, because they watch Pose a lot.
Yeah, but not that much.
Well, they watch a lot. They just still can't tell our faces apart.
Yeah.
They watch Pose a lot. And so they were
something.
They were at this play.
Yeah.
So great. Good for you. Actually, I love those people.
Yeah, good for you. You didn't even clear the lowest bar, but somehow you're still getting a passing grade. That's what San Diego is.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Great fish tacos. Eh. That's all they ever talk about. People in San Diego just talk about fish tacos all the time.
All right, here's my San Diego. Among the, my cousins are always like, oh, there's this great restaurant in San Diego. And I'm just like, it's not, though. It just isn't.
Yeah.
Anyway, fuck that town.
Anyway.
Maybe we'll do a show there one time.
Yeah, San Diego, get at us. Come to our shows.
Did we talk about the straight pride parade yet?
I think it just, yeah, I mean, like last week we touched on it because it was just starting to.
Was it already?
I can't keep track of what I've yelled about on Twitter and what we've talked about in person or what we've yelled about on the text thread.
Yeah. So I don't know. The answer is I don't know.
Audience, what do you expect us to do? Listen back to our own show? I can barely stand myself in the current moment.
No.
I can't go back.
Never, ever, ever. Anyway, obviously Straight Pride Parade, bunch of fucking bigots.
I mean,
if we didn't say it already.
100% fuck you. Oh, yeah, we did talk about it.
Oh, no, this is all coming
we're
together.
We're like, yeah, Boston, come see us.
That's right.
Please
come buy tickets. And Philly. Philly, come get at us. And also Minneapolis.
All the places. I did a big joke thread about the Straight Pride Parade, but then like, honestly, like, I'm mad that I'm even, like, talking about this, and it's like, you know, we should be talking about pride. Like, we should be talking about actual queer people.
Yeah.
This is like the...
I mean,
was like the other day when Rachel Dolezal was trending because of...
Wait, what?
Oh, my God. The quickest story in the world, because I don't want to talk about this, but Charlamagne...
two winners.
God, how do I start this?
This is sort of like the Alien versus Predator of...
Let me start from the other angle. Elizabeth Warren went on Charlemagne's show.
For God's sake.
I don't fucking know why anyone goes on Charlemagne's show. Elizabeth Warren goes on there and he called her the original Rachel Dolezal because of her Native ancestry claims.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucked on all levels. It's very dumb. But my point was only to say that talking about Rachel Dolezal instead of talking about actual black women is a problem. And I'm mad anytime her name trends. I'm mad that I brought it up here.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to talk about her again, but I was just trying to make a point. But that's what I'm like, oh, all this me joking about the straight pride parade, like I could just actually be talking about people. So.
I know. It's hard, right? Like you feel like you do the dunks because you have to. Because
you want to like burn some shit down. But then you're like, well, let's just talk about the people who are doing good shit.
Well, but that's how the bigots win. Mm-hmm. Is they're still talking about their stupid asses and distracting from, you know, trying to not be as fucked up a society. I don't know. This one's not good. The cop who murdered Tamir Rice, they're trying to put him back on the job.
Ugh.
This is a man who was so scared of, how old was he? 10, 11, something like that?
I don't recall. He's very young, yeah.
A child holding a toy gun that he had no choice but to murder him in his eyes because of fear.
Yeah, this is in Cleveland. And right now there's a massive petition, rightfully so, 170,000 signatures at the time of this Move On reporting.
Yeah.
To not get him reinstated. It's outrageous that they need to even do that.
I mean, look, it's like if cops really want to pull this, like not all cops or like Blue Lives Matter shit, then why are you, what is valuable about this man?
Right.
Like what is necessary about him? And if, as a cop, you're thinking, well, it could have happened to me, then guess what? You're a fucking racist murderer, too. Like, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
This is why cops are racist. All of them.
Tamir Rice was 12 years old.
Yes.
Cleveland, get it together.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. We got sent this tweet. We'd already flagged it. I guess Tawny rightfully pointed out that it's unclear how corroborated some of this reporting is to us. But, I mean, maybe it's because this type of story would be buried. But we saw it first on a Medium post that was, like, pretty well researched. Tweet basically talking about how there's this, we'll call her a racist piece of shit, Renee Bach, who's a white woman. No medical training, who is went to Uganda, has been performing fake medicine because she's like sort of, she's basically like a person with a problem who, you know, needs to pretend to be a doctor. It's a thing that's happened. But I think, you know, it looks like she's basically been responsible for, we'll say allegedly, hundreds of children's deaths.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, reporting aside, and like, we just don't know. We just don't want to be spreading false information. If it's false, but I don't know. It's also like fully feels like the type of thing that is not going to be covered in American big media because
right. We
don't care about black people.
So I think, you know, she's a missionary. And I think that there are a lot of stories like this of missionaries, quote, trying to do some good and going about it in dangerous and terrible ways. So what I want to point people to, because, again, you know, it's a Medium.com post. I am not a journalist. Andrew, are you a journalist?
Tony's a journalist, everyone.
Fuck, Andrew, we got to stay on the same page about this. We're not journalists.
What?
So what I'm always just trying to keep in mind is, like, we are trying to point you to these stories so that you can find more information on your own, because news is squirrely, and I didn't go to school for that. I went to school for mime. So I went to school. I took yoga for credit. So y'all need to look this up, your damn selves. But I would point you to the account No White Saviors, at No White Saviors on Twitter. They seem to be talking about it a lot and pointing out more stories like this one. They seem to be also, they are trying to hold this woman legally responsible for these crimes.
I think the more generalized thing that is worth just touching on a little bit is, like, you know, this woman is like a missionary, probably and definitely delusional in some ways. However, I think the thing is, like, this is like the extreme example of why people's intentions don't matter. You know, everyone who says, like, oh, I'm not racist, I'm trying to help. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, guess what? Sometimes you are racist. And look, It doesn't really matter, but it's like, what do we want to call racist? Do we want to call the system that doesn't give a fuck about these kids? Do we want to call this woman? Do we want to call her immediate enablers? Like, allegedly, but you know, this type of thing happens all the time. And it's like, that's the central crux of this show. It's like, oh, you can't call them racist. Guess what? We can.
Boom. We did it.
Holy shit. We do have to go to our interview. I guess really quick also, just generally, YouTube has been trash. They at the same time been corporatizing Pride, but supporting lots of neo-Nazis. And I don't even want to name these people, but basically is coming down on the, oh, we can't call something racist. It's just a debate side of the tech thing.
And
fuck tech companies, all of them.
And I'm sure I've brought it up on here because Gabby Dunn talks about this very openly, and a friend of the show, Gabby Dunn, also host of Bad with Money Pod and Just Between Us. She talks about this openly, and I'm surprised this hasn't been a bigger story, that YouTube has been demonetizing queer content for years.
Yeah.
So you cannot, as a YouTuber, which Gabby primarily made a living from for a while, as a queer YouTuber, if her videos had queer content, they would not allow you to sell ads on it.
Yeah.
Yet, you can have white supremacist content on there, just all kinds of hate-filled content.
Yeah.
And you can sell ads just fine on that shit.
I mean, it's basically, or sometimes they'll demonetize white supremacists, but like YouTube, like—
Sometimes, and they don't have like a stopgap. Like,
like a system. Well, I guess what I'm saying though is like YouTube and lots of these tech platforms claim to be like free speech, we're just letting everyone talk. But like, guess what? By treating queer content the same— as literal fucking neo-Nazis, you are taking an editorial stand. Mm-hmm. You are saying this is what is equivalent. And guess what? Every time you actually show that, tech companies, you are fucking wrong. And you're always on the side of the racists. It is wild to me that we think these people are smart or anything. We talked to Jeff Chan this week.
Your ice has still not made it into the glass.
It never will.
Another video here because this ice is trying. We've been talking for damn near 30 minutes.
Yeah, about 18 minutes. We got to talk to Jeff Chan this week. He's a friend of mine, but he's like a writer-director. He wrote on Pen 15, and he has a new movie out called Plus One with Maya Erskine. And
let's hear it. Listen.
God.
We started talking about the thing that the three of us were going to write. Jeff and I just met. But
yeah. So it's about...
Here we go.
Yes.
Okay, so each of us gets to say three sentences of the pitch. Okay?
Okay. God.
So starting with you.
Okay. Mandy and Garandolo are best friends since birth, but they both have a secret. But they also know each other's secrets.
I hate when there's improv games because
That's your one sentence.
Yeah. It's your
That's the one secret. That's Mandy's secret.
So Mandy, okay,
Mandy's good. Secret is they hate improv games.
No, Garandolo loves
and improv. Garandolo, of course, a founding
Mandy,
member of the Upright
Mandy
Citizens
Brigade
in Los Angeles.
A gun loving Asian dude.
Oh,
he
God,
yeah,
loves, well, that's right.
He loves gun. He's liberal for the most part, but he will not give up his guns. And God, that's a big conflict of the between him and Garandolo.
And the show is called Zip Zap Zop.
Zip Zap Zop with Mandy and Garandolo.
Zip Zap Pop Pop.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You guys get it. It's guns. Jeff Chan is here.
What's up? Co-creator of Mandy and Garandolo. Zip Zap Zop.
We'll find the cold open somewhere in there.
It's in there.
Some of
guys.
You might not.
Credit card all of points, it. Taxes.
Who knows?
We dropped some real financial bombs on.
No one's listening by on this you. At this point.
Jeff has to call his accountant right now.
I do.
Jeff Chan, what's up? Usually I ask people beforehand how they like to be introduced. I'm going to say writer and director.
Last night we had a screening at through Film Independent at the ArcLight, and Elvis Mitchell, the legendary critic, introduced the film. And right before he went up, he was like, "How do you want me to introduce you guys?" And I was like, "Because it's me and Andrew Reimer, co-writer, co-director." And I said, "You can introduce me as visionary director Jeff Chan, and Andrew Reimer as his friend Jeff Chan. And he kind of like chuckled or whatever, and he goes out in front of the crowd and like everyone applauds, and he's like, okay, we have got a special treat for you guys tonight. We've got visionary director Jeff Chan and his friend Andrew Reimer. And everyone walks out. And
how'd that go?
I think it went well. I mean, it's Elvis Mitchell. He was able to can sell anything.
Amazing.
That's funny. Yeah. I like the idea that you can just tell people to say anything about you.
And then they do.
If they have
for
to.
For the right price.
Oh, yeah. You paid him a lot
the
of money.
Level price crazy, of whatever.
That crazy plus one money.
Jeff, yeah, you have a movie called Plus One.
I do.
You and Andrew Reimer.
Yeah.
Co-wrote and co-directed a movie called Plus One.
Comes out on June 14th. It's a romantic comedy.
Tight.
Yeah.
Tell people about it. Have you been like doing a lot of press, like this kind of press?
We've been doing, you know.
How are you feeling
it's
now?
It's really funny. So the stars of our movie are Jack Quaid, who was in The Hunger Games, and he's about to be on an Amazon show called The Boys. And Maya Erskine, who co-created and stars in the show Pen 15. And so people care way more about what they have to say than us. So we will, they're, you know, doing LA Times stuff and USA Today. And I, you know, Reimer and I have been doing these phone interviews.
Hell
with,
yeah.
The,
and your friend's podcast.
Arkansas. Well, this is the biggest thing I've done. I mean that. This is very exciting for me.
Thanks
but
for
usually
coming.
It's like the Ridgewood High School Gazette.
Hell yeah.
Shout out to Ridgewood.
Yeah. Got you. I feel like because I've been to a couple screenings now, and I feel like you're always pretty good on the mic, but you've been getting like not better, but like more practiced each time. I feels like it was like, oh, you're really on the fucking circuit with this film right
yes,
now.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I have peeled off the nerves band-aid, and now sometimes I go up there and I don't even know what I'm
hell
saying.
Hell yeah.
Like, really get loose with it.
But tell people about the movie, first of all.
How about that? Yeah, get ready. So it's two people. One of them loves improv. The other one doesn't. Well, hopefully that's in the show. Otherwise, that's going to get cut out.
You can't take our idea.
Yeah, it's not our
that
show.
That was born here.
Yeah.
So technically, Earwolf owns 10% of it.
Oh, no. Damn it.
Passive participation.
I got to get my accountant on this. It's a movie about two friends who are single, a guy and a girl, Ben and Alice. And they're hitting that time in their lives when all of their friends are getting married. And that really upsets them for various reasons. Alice is recently out of a long-term relationship, and Ben is chronically single, and he feels like he's losing all of his like bros, his wingmen. And so the two of them, to sort of deal with that sadness, decide to team up and be each other's plus one at every single wedding they need to go to. So it's 12 weddings in one movie.
Wow.
Pretty much every scene in the movie is at a wedding. And, you know, it's a rom-com. So, you know, at first it sort of starts as a buddy comedy, and it's the two of them kind of crapping all over each other and making fun of each other. And slowly as the weddings get better and, they start to view romance a little bit differently and maybe even each other a little differently.
Maybe. Oh, that
probably not
sweet.
Though.
Yeah.
Probably not.
No, then they just go their separate ways.
No, then they're happens. Just like, this was cool.
It's, we're reinventing the rom-com.
Yeah. It's more just like we've popped in on these people in a summer in their life and then we never see them again.
Then they leave.
You never see them kiss a single person.
Yeah, correct. No, the movie's really sweet. I've seen it a bunch of times now.
You've
it's
seen
really
it too
fun
many
every
times,
time.
Too.
Yeah.
Have you seen it three times now? I think one test screening, the Friends and Family screening, and the LA Pacific Film Festival screening.
Are you looking for things to poke at? Are you looking for holes, threads to pull on?
What's the beef, T?
I think actually at the end, I will say at this last one, I mostly was just drinking beer and eating a hot dog in the back row, and I kind of dozed off for a bit. So,
but
I'd seen it a bunch of times, but it was fun to see it with a crowd. It was really fun to see it with especially the LA Asian Pacific Film Festival, LAAPF, film festival crowd. It was really fun. It was really cool. And like, you know, I think that crowd especially was really turning out for Maya. And, like, that was fucking dope.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And also, the other thing, normally, I have guests with this much personal history with one or two of the hosts. I guess we have friends on a lot.
Yeah.
But Jeff and I have a pretty hilarious story of how we met. And I'm trying to decide how much we're going to tell on this podcast.
Why wouldn't we tell all of it?
I don't know.
Why wouldn't you tell? Now I got to hear
mostly,
all of it.
Well, mostly because it's wildly embarrassing to me. But so
it's not. No, it's not. It's embarrassing to both of us equally.
That's true.
Now you have to.
Yeah. We're going
to
do it. Are we gonna do the version we tell in rooms?
Well, sure. Well, yeah. So here's what happened. I moved to LA 3.5 years ago. And up until that point, I was like basically a white person. All the people I hung out with were white, and everyone I dated was white. And that's just like the identity I had. I didn't even think about my Asianness. I was like, whatever. And get out here and saw the movie La La Land and loved it. It was like my favorite movie ever. And I was like telling everyone about it. I was like, you got to see La La Land. It's so good. And one night I'm on Twitter. I don't really use Twitter that much, but I see this tweet going around Asian Twitter, which I saw because I followed an account named Angry Asian Man. And the tweet was from a guy named Andrew T, someone I never heard of before. And the tweet said, yo, how come no one told me La La Land has a white guy fake speaking Chinese? So racist. And then all these Asian people tweeted like, thanks for letting me know. Not going to see it now. And it got like many retweets and likes, and I saw it and I was like, oh man, I don't know that I agree with that because I'm Chinese and I loved the movie, and that moment feels so insignificant to me. So I did something I've never done before, which is tweet at a stranger, a dissenting opinion. And I
what
said,
a stranger to pick too.
And I had no idea. Oh I was God. I think I was throwing a lit match
listeners,
into
listeners
it.
Listeners to this show have a pretty good idea of how this barrels went down.
Nitroglycerin.
Yeah.
So I say, hey, I'm Chinese and I saw the movie and I didn't think that moment was racist.
I
hit send.
Oh boy.
And I'm all the shit that I wrote I think is genuinely too embarrassing. If you're really dedicated, you can find it on Twitter. But basically I proceeded to like cyberbully Jeff at that point pretty badly.
Oh my God.
In a way that was, you know, not cool. Like, if that makes sense, like not nice and
picture,
not okay.
Picture a 13-year-old kid, that's me, picking a fight with John Cena. That's
yeah.
That's what it looked like online. It was me just getting my ass absolutely kicked.
It was not cool.
But we went 15 tweets deep, 15 rounds.
Yeah, it was a lot.
And
of
I was
shit.
A bloody pulp by the end of it.
Did you land a single punch?
No, I didn't. Okay. I was abused.
It's not your venue. Yeah, that's I think the critical thing is it was not nice of me. I was a little drunk.
Incredible.
I remember every single thing T said to me was met with likes and retweets and like, yeah, get them. And everything I
well,
said.
Yeah, that was, it was the crowd.
It was
think
the
that
mob.
Made it,
and
like,
everything I said to
up,
T got all these like angry responses like, oh, you can't even see your white overlords holding your leash, like shit like that. I was like, damn.
You're like, I don't even use Twitter that much.
Yeah, I didn't.
And then, so fast forward to like, I think 2 days later, I get an email from my manager who's like, hey, you remember that guy you cyberbullied a couple days ago? And of course, I'm like, you're going to have to be way more specific.
he's putting 10 people on blast a day,
know.
At least.
But he was like, it's this guy, Jeff Chan, and he's also a client of mine. You guys have to meet up.
Was this your idea, Jeff?
No. It was a full-on Parent Trap situation. Yeah. Like, you're getting dinner tonight. And I was like, with
what?
Who?
Yeah.
And he's like, it's Andrew T, and I think you're really going to like him. And, you know, I rep him also. I was like, oh, no, I really don't want to do that.
Yeah, he beat me up.
I was picturing this like 7-foot like hulking.
Oh, and I was just like, oh God, I said a bunch of so essentially, I mean, I think the thing is, and it's a thing that I have had lobbed at me, which I don't like also, which is like people questioning, I was questioning your Asianness, and people question my Asianness all the fucking time. And you know how we bullies are. We just pass the pain down to the next
sure,
person.
Sure,
but
sure.
It was a thing where I was like, as soon as like it was a this is truly one of my most like, okay, online Andrew needs to rein it in moments, because I was just like, oh God, I don't know if I was genuinely like, I don't know if I could face the person who I said these things to, even though like, right, I think there's like a tiny kernel of what I believe in there, but also the onlineness of it made it so fucked up.
Yeah, it's so heightened.
Yeah.
How was the dinner?
Well, it was fine.
What do you mean it was fine? It changed everything.
Oh, well, yeah. It was, I mean, sorry, it wasn't bad.
How dare you?
No, it was great. But I think to me, the most important thing is like, I meet Jeff and I'm like, okay, right. This guy obviously is a fucking thoughtful, charm monster person. Like, what is wrong? That's mostly why I'm embarrassed, because like when we actually met, I was just like, oh God, what the fuck is wrong with you, Andrew? That was most
okay.
Of
yeah. So the dinner. That's right. I understand you saying it was just fine, because for you, you had something that you eventually felt guilty about.
Yeah.
I don't think you should feel so guilty about it, because for me, what ended up happening was Andrew and I talked a lot, and it turned out we actually had a lot of the same experiences of being Asian men in Hollywood, and similar even experiences growing up in white suburbs. And what ended up happening was T was like, hey, man, you got to like come meet some of the other Asians in Hollywood. And I was like, I would love to. I just don't even know where to begin.
He
was like, just come with me to one of these events. Like, there's this writer, Jessica Gao. She has this
friend of the show. She might be on in a couple weeks. Who knows? Anything could happen.
Props to Jessica Gao. And so I went with Andrew to one of these meetups that they have once a month. And I was just like blown away. It was like Charlie going into the chocolate factory. I was like, this is...
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. I wanted to walk all the way to the end of that metaphor, but yes, it's fine.
Yeah, I just saw you roll your eyes and I'm like, what? Asian people are just your sideshow, Jeff. We're just a joke.
Keep the feud going.
We're just some sort of candy store.
It'll never die. It'll never die. I can never not police Jeff.
God, it's actually such a beautiful story. It's very encouraging that cyberbullying can lead to good. No, that's not the message.
It was honestly my first group of Asian friends, and Andrew and I are friends now, and we've talked a lot about this stuff and ended up developing a show together and about this.
Yeah.
And it's become a really important part of my life. So I look on that fight / very productive.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. I absolutely do too. Thing. I guess I'm still definitely in my head about it.
You just feel a little bad.
I feel horrible. I genuinely still feel horrible.
I would love to just open up your Twitter right now and look at the last week and
I do it all the time. I haven't really stopped, but
we did discover you have a 17,000 person block list.
Yeah.
What?
here's what I will do though. It's because, it's just literally like a nervous energy thing. But like, for instance, anyone that says like sexist or racist shit on anything, or anyone that like steps to one of my friends, I just start blocking them. And like, sometimes when you have friends that have shit that goes like way viral, it's like, you know, hundreds of people. And so just like block, 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 block. And
that's
so
incredible.
Over the course of probably a couple years. Yeah.
You've blocked 17,000 people.
Yeah.
Well,
manually. God. Because you can do it automatically.
That is crazy.
I like it. I like that if someone maybe like doesn't really know who you are, or runs across the podcast or something, it goes to try and follow you, they discover that they're blocked by
that
you.
That has happened multiple times. Like literally, like, and I had to kind of ease up a little bit on people that were like friends with a lot of my friends. But like, for instance, someone who was working on a project with a friend of mine, our mutual friend was like, oh, you have to, you know, this is my friend Andrew, he's great. And she was like, he's blocked me on Twitter already. And I was like, I don't know.
It
could happen for anything.
You probably made fun of something.
Or, yeah, well, the other reason is...
She loved La La Land. The other
she had to go.
The other thing is, I will also block anyone that advertises to me.
Oh.
So I had to tap the brakes on that, because I started to get friends that had shit that was worth advertising.
Sure.
Which is not cool of me. Wow, this really turned out to be more illuminating of your boy Andrew than he was
expecting. That's why I'm here.
Before.
This
I
is
know.
A special episode.
I know.
This Jeff is here. Not only is he charming, but he also sneakily like exposes things about people.
It really is. Smart. This is like a goddamn intervention. terrible.
Let's get into Andrew. And you're wearing a shirt with a gun on it. It says Los Angeles Gun Club.
Two guns, I think, right? Oh, no, just one gun. It's not
You're
that.
Bragging that maybe it's more guns.
The other shirt design has two crossed guns. I thought guns were a lot funnier when I moved here. I don't know. I like shooting a gun. I'm sorry. I know they're bad.
That's part of our show. We're going to unpack that on our three-person show.
I can't wait. No, again, that's the plot to Mandy and Garofalo.
That's what I'm talking about. Our show, Zip Zap Zop. Mandy and Garofalo.
Yeah, Mandy and Janine Garofalo.
Okay, actually, this is kind of coming together.
Nicolas Cage's character, Mandy, and Janine Garofalo. Mandy does not like improv, but Janine does.
That actually,
and they
truly
the
all the pieces are falling into place.
Yeah. How is this possible?
I'll watch that show.
Oh my God. But yeah, I think so, you know, among other things, it's like, I think that was the other genesis. It's like, I think it's like so fun that, like, I don't know, just getting to know Jeff over the course of these last like couple years with this lens of like, that's the other thing I think that's really fun about Jeff is like, in some ways he's like a new Asian person and it's fucking dope. Is it not cool to put on air? I'm sorry.
Asian. Well, just tell what I mean by new Asian. Like, I am new to my Asianness or new to the community of Asians. What?
The latter. Or okay. Kind of a little.
I mean, I accept either.
We have spent a lot of time talking about how that's been influencing your work and your work going forward.
Completely. Yeah. I think previously, everything I was doing, whether I knew it or not, I was telling white stories, even though I wasn't like, this is a white suburb and this, all the movies and TV shows I'd grown up on mm-hmm. were white stories. And so I didn't think about my identity being able to change how a story is told, mm-hmm. right? Like if it's an Asian family, it's going to be a different story by the nature of it being mm-hmm. an Asian family or an Asian protagonist. And so once I started opening that box, it was like, it was incredible. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I was just
trying to get to the end of the metaphor.
It was just, yeah.
Oh, like, man. It all goes back to that. So, yeah, I think, you know, caring about that stuff has been really valuable to me on every level, not just creatively, but everything from having friends like Andrew to be able to talk about that stuff and realizing it's so different to talk to mm-hmm. a fellow Asian guy about what it's like to be an Asian guy than it is to talk to your white friend, as yeah. well-meaning as they might mm-hmm. be, they just don't have the same experience.
Yeah. Or and your parents and people like that, yeah. even, where you're just like,
eh. Yeah, generational
you don't
differences.
Fucking get it.
Yeah, it's incredible to have like a true peer, like when you maybe previously didn't have full peers in that way.
Totally. And the crazy thing about Andrew is that even though you on Twitter might have a particular persona, if you look at that fight, you might assume we're one thing and another thing. But getting to know you, you're like, you're much sweeter than I am. Like you are like the nicest guy I've ever met in my life. You wouldn't like hurt a fly if it was trying to ruin
I would
your
shoot
lunch.
A fly, but I wouldn't.
But just because you
wouldn't hurt
enjoy
it, yeah.
shooting guns.
Well, it's just because I could hit it. Great aim.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Weird. Okay. Let's do a fucking voicemail. Jesus.
Hey there, I am a super white lady teacher in a primarily black and brown school in Philadelphia. I don't know if this is racist, but I tell my students that black and brown people cannot be racist because real racism is about a power dynamic. And I just don't know if that's like the wrong thing to say, because then they just keep telling me I look like Taylor Swift, which I don't. So just curious about that, and I appreciate your time. Thanks.
God, wow. Black and brown kids are the best roasters. They will roast you to filth. They will read your ass in the best. I used to work in schools, and I was just like, but we all have to hang it up. Kids are,
yeah,
they end it all.
Oh, yeah.
They'll end your life.
Hell yeah.
Shout Taylor out to Taylor Swift.
That's amazing.
I just wanted to, I think that the thing I wanted to hone in for this question a little bit was like a little bit of that like sociological power dynamic, definition of racism, the word racism, whatever, and like how people actually use it, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And like, cause that's a major Twitter thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, We're often not speaking the same language when we talk about shit like this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Does that spark anything, I guess?
Well, the first thing I thought was like that, while theoretically, I guess it's good that the kids learn that distinction, like you said, it's not practical in the application. Because what it sounds like is that the kids are going to use that as an excuse to keep being mean.
Yeah.
This is what I often say. It's like, if something isn't technically racist, that doesn't mean it isn't still mean.
Right.
Like,
right,
it's not
right.
just it's still not very rude. So it seems like, I mean, I don't know. The kids are rough, and they're going to be terrible to someone, some little white kid, and then be like, it's not racism because teacher said it isn't. And it's like, does it really matter?
Yeah.
It's just a different conversation.
Yeah. Right. Like, is that fucking helpful?
Right. And how old are they? Did she say?
I don't think she said.
I don't know. I'm just picturing. Yeah.
I'm picturing pretty young.
Yeah.
Maybe sixth graders.
Yeah. Yeah. Something where really they just know enough about the world to really fuck you up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To call you Taylor Swift just because you're a white
Yeah.
lady.
Yeah.
Also, like, maybe that's a compliment. If you don't look like Taylor Swift, she's pretty. Maybe, maybe take it as a compliment, teacher.
Wow. I'm not going there, of course. But I don't know. Yeah, Jeff, is that like, I feel like, actually, I'm about to say something that's probably a little false. I'm trying to figure out exactly. Well, I'll just fucking say the thing I thought, which is like, you know, there is an element of like that, like, oh, it's like a power dynamic thing is like, this kind of like performative wokeness kind of shit, you know? Like, is that like, I don't know, where's your experience on talking about racism in that way? You know what I mean? Does that like.
And basically, a person talking about it in terms of like being a champion for wokeness? Like, or.
Yeah, well, or essentially the idea that like. The version that kind of like discounts the idea of bigotry against white people.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not to just deflect it back at you, but I'd love to hear your opinion.
Yeah, of course. I think it's one of those things where, I mean, I think to get by doing this show, normally what I say is like, fine, let's call it racism, but like, how bad is it really to make fun of white people?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my surely problematic middle ground, you know, which is just like, it's like, I don't know. Sure, there are... you know, some things that, you know, it's like one of those, like, what are you going to, are we talking about making fun of Irish people or some shit like that? Is that's, you know, but the general idea of like whiteness, I'm very like, fine, let's call it whatever we want. But like, I just don't think we can say that it matters.
Right. Because it's not going to affect those kids' ability to grow up and like get a job.
Yeah. Or like get loans or, you know, shit like that.
Does, and this is something, again, another argument you'll see on Twitter, does it change? So the idea of it being like based in a power dynamic, you know, when people go like, well, I was the only white kid in my black whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
Do the power dynamic shift like little microclimates then? Is then there a power dynamic where every kid in the class is black? And calling you Taylor Swift and you're one white kid.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but I feel like that's an argument people make a lot.
Yeah. I think anytime you're being isolated for the way you look as a kid, that can be limiting.
Like very damaging.
In general, yeah.
Yeah.
Whether it's race or weight or height or whatever.
Yeah.
That can do things to your perception of your own identity and your confidence. And that can become a snowball that does longer term damage. So I think in that way, people should be careful.
Yeah. I'm very callous about it. I'm always just like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
But of course, it's often not. It's still bullying, right? Like if this were not a teacher, but a little white girl, they were singling and calling Taylor Swift. And then you're probably, look, there's elements of sexism involved in that kind of shit. That's the thing I will say. Most like shit that, like, every time racists bring up the movie White Chicks as like an excuse for whiteface, I think a lot of people forget that White Chicks is like an incredibly sexist movie.
That's
like,
true.
The race shit fully aside, it's like really sexist.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess we're kind of still back to like, it's not really race, but it is mean. It's bullying. It's damaging, like you said. And that's what's more important because these are kids.
Yeah.
So maybe these sociological parsing about what's
that's kind of why I'm like, important. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Call the show Yo, Is This Bullying? Or Yo, Is This Fucked?
It's not catchy.
It's not catchy. You're right.
It just doesn't do anything. Mm. I don't know. But yeah. But so yeah, I guess, Jeff, my question for you was a little bit like, does that version of like when you think of the word racist, like does that power dynamic thing enter into it for you personally?
No, not usually.
Yeah,
I don't think that's a common thought of version of racism, you know, generally.
Yeah.
Usually it's a little bit more obvious.
And blunt.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, I don't like someone because of their race.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, and the danger with that, with the larger, you know, it's like power structures and society and all that boring shit.
Right.
I think that's the other problem is like anything past that is incredibly boring.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh.
Because it does boil down to like, if I see a bunch of white dudes yell something at a black person, I think of racism. If I see the same scenario reversed, I don't.
So, yeah. Exactly. I don't.
Like, if they yell something race-based, I mean, right. Like, I don't think.
Right, and it all depends on context. I was just in Shanghai and Seoul. I was over there for 2 weeks. And, you know, I've just heard all my life from some people who meant well, but they're just like, oh, well, yeah, when you go to Japan, everyone's just like, if you're a white person, they, like, treat you like a celebrity. And I was like, is that true? Yeah. And I was, like, curious about that stuff of, like, if white people are, like, you know, people freak out and get super excited, and they don't really, but there is a little bit of a premium on
there's
on
like
whiteness.
An otherness. Oh, yeah.
Otherness, premium. Yeah, but yeah. In a positive way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't love that for obvious reasons, because I'm just like, come on, guys.
Right, we're cool.
Can't we be cool in our own land?
Yeah.
Cool over in America. Can't we just be like, you know, just accept that, you know, I don't know. It's just frustrating when I see that, because that messes with my identity then, because I'm like, are white people the master race?
Yeah.
Like,
are they cool everywhere?
Is that the lesson here?
Yeah.
Is that's everyone what the
British
excited?
Empire, that's what they accomplished largely.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a funny idea. Like, no matter what country I go to, are people just more excited to see white people? I don't like that.
Yeah. That bothers me, because I kind of went over there hoping that to be proved wrong,
yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I hope I go over there. And it's like, no. Asianness is hot and whiteness is whatever, you know, but I think because, you know, America's
Hollywood and
so
all that
good
shit.
At exporting pop culture and Hollywood and all that, that's just been seeded into everybody from the moment they're born, the movies that they're watching and the music that they're listening to. Justin Bieber is hot. Leonardo DiCaprio is hot. You know, so that when you see someone that looks like that and you're used to seeing a billion people who don't, you know, that creates a feeling of excitement.
There's also this kind of weird generational thing where I'm like, I had to be old when like K-pop and Crazy Rich Asians came out. Like, I could have been a good person.
You could have been a cool type.
I say that a lot, actually, when people talk about, you know, working on content that's Asian focused and trying to reshape the way Asians are seen, specifically Asian men. And they're like, you know, do you think that's going to like shift how you're seen? And I was like, honestly, and this might sound cynical, I was like, I think our generation's fucked. Like, we are the people we are, and that's just how it is, unfortunately. I'm hopeful for the next one, though.
Yeah. God. Well, hopefully we can contribute to some of that positive shit. Yeah. I had a question for you, actually. I think I've talked to you briefly since you got back from Asia, but did you notice that people could tell you were American?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right away. Yeah.
It's so fucking depressing.
The saddest thing that's ever happened in my life was I was boarding a plane back to America from China, and the flight attendant standing at the door, and she each time a Chinese person walks in, she's like, ni hao. Yeah, and then I walk in, she's like, hey.
It's like, they can just tell. It's so fucking, it's so depressing. All right, let's do another voice.
Wait, I'm curious, Tani, do you agree with that about our generation versus previous generations? Do you think that, because you kind of gave me you kind of made a face there.
Made a face?
Well, not in a negative or positive way. I was just curious what you think of, like, is this generation screwed, or are we plastic enough where people can really change?
You mean of Asian people?
Just in general, I think. Like, how flexible are people towards their ingrained, you know, attraction is one I think about a lot. There was a podcast that recently came out, an Invisibilia episode about Asian women who don't find Asian men attractive, and they're like trying to do that. I know. Tough to listen to.
Any of those, like, I just don't, but I'm trying. I'm like, keep that in your head.
Yeah. It's literally
the shit in your head.
I know. It's tough. It's tough because on one hand, I'm like, good, you know?
Good, but also,
you're
like,
trying.
Nobody needs to know that your brain is fucked. I guess I feel like I have hope. I have hope for all generations, because I've talked on the show a lot about my dad, how my dad is, you know, 64, and he has become more progressive in his old age, like just leaned more and more accepting of LGBTQ rights and stuff. And he was always pretty left-leaning, but like just, you know, had a little bit of a, unfortunately, in the black community, and especially for men, like not a great track record for LGBTQ issues. Mm-hmm. And he's just gotten better and better about it. So that gives me hope. If he can do it, like why can't I keep moving, you know, towards the right side of things? So maybe
that.
We'll all, but no, I mean, I do think that maybe we're fucked in terms of like the things that have been imprinted on us.
Yeah.
And like how we see ourselves maybe is going to be the hardest thing to change.
I think that's the there is just so much subconscious shit that you're like, what are you going to fucking get the shovel out? Let's go.
Yeah. If your dream is to marry a Zach Morris type, it's going to be pretty hard to unlink that piece of your brain.
And I feel like we do it more to ourselves. Like I have harsher feelings about myself that are rooted in bullshit than I do about other people. You know what I mean? Like I'm more like accepting and forgiving of people who defy the like whiteness premium.
Yeah.
But then when I look at myself, I still find remnants.
Or your consciousness can kick in, but like with yourself, it's all subconscious.
Yeah.
Well, so I think that's the greater thing is like wokeness is in vogue right now, right? Like people want to be basically politically correct and not racist. And that's generally surface level though. It's the things you say and the way you treat other people. But inside, I'm not saying that people are looking at each other and being, no, you're still just an Asian to me. It's like deep down, I think there is a slow shift happening, but that takes a little bit longer. Those ingrained, whether it's attraction or, you know, whatever.
Just like, little subconscious thing like fear or like whatever.
Yeah.
It's just like we learned a bunch of shit. Anyway, I'm largely pessimistic. Okay, here's the next voice.
Hi, Tawny, Andrew, and guests. My name is Michelle, and I'm from Texas and live in New York City. Thank you so much for your show. I love it. It's like an antidepressant for me. Andrew, I especially appreciate your sharp criticism of racist Asians. My question for y'all is, does international racism get graded on a curve? Let me explain. I travel outside of the U.S. a lot for work, and I'm often, if not always, the only other in a given space. I recently got back from Chile, where a man walked up to me, pulled his eyes into slants, and asked me why my eyes were like that, and where was I from? No, really, where are you really from? I speak Spanish, but this isn't enough to dampen my otherness at all. I've also faced gross Asian fetishization while traveling in other countries. I would not think twice about incidents like this being racist when it happens to me in the States, but for some reason, I feel bad for being angry when it happens elsewhere. And I feel like I'm supposed to give it a pass because I'm an outsider in their country. And usually I'm the more privileged one in these contexts because I'm traveling many times for work. So can the racism rubric be the same across different contexts? Thank you.
I feel like we actually kind of already started talking about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And straight up, I'd forgotten this was next on the docket.
Great work,
I'm
Andrew.
I'm an idiot.
No, you're a visionary.
Yeah, you knew what you were doing. Yeah, you set it all up.
I think she says a lot of interesting things that I think she often on this show, people kind of answer their own questions, you know, like she did a good job of acknowledging that like her privilege plays into it, different cultural things. I always come back to, and I don't know that I would call this giving racism a pass in other countries, but I travel a lot too. You mentioned Japan. I went to Japan. Being a black person in rural Japan is wild. They just touch you. They just grab you and touch you. Yeah, it's all very friendly. Well, what I experienced was all very friendly. It's probably not all very friendly, but they people just touch you. So I don't necessarily think it's giving it a pass, but I do often, I always try to remember, I don't know nearly enough about what these people are thinking. Like, I don't know what the cultural differences are here. I've never lived here. I am a full stranger. I don't speak the language. I don't understand enough about what's happening to be as mad about it as I am at home because I'm from here.
Yeah.
And I may not know everything that's, quote, in their heart, but I know I know enough.
Yeah.
And you know more what they know.
Yes.
So we know
the same things.
That people here should know better.
Exactly. Yes.
Whereas I think there's an element of like, well, how could they know? But
yeah.
Then there's also an element of like, because we have a multi-billion dollar industry that makes sure they know what Americans are feeling at all times.
And some things are very basic. Like, I think it should be a worldwide thing that like maybe you don't touch strangers or like pull on braids of someone you don't know. But maybe it's not there. Like, who knows?
So maybe it's a sign of respect in rural Japan.
Yeah, and then those arguments are dangerous too, because it's like, oh, it's a sign of respect. It's like, no. It's still an othering kind of.
I know. It's,
but yeah, I guess, yeah. I just, like, I know enough to step back and go, like, I'm not the authority on this. I know I don't feel great.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to move away.
Yeah. I've generally found that to be true also of when I'm abroad, people are quicker to bring up my
race.
Asianness.
Yeah.
And I am more lenient about it also.
Yeah.
But one corollary to that I'll add is something I do enjoy about traveling abroad is that when I start to speak, then I become American. Mm. So here I'm Asian.
Always.
Yeah. But when I studied abroad in London, I was American. So I talked to someone at a bar or something and it's like, oh, you're American. And then that's what I become. So I don't know that that's going to be true everywhere. I'm sure there are plenty of places I could go that it's like, all right, Asian, nice try with the accent. But I do enjoy that there's that identifier of American is more pronounced when I'm somewhere else.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, I think, like, to the caller's question, the extent to which you can give sort of people a pass is that, like, these, like, attitudes – again, are largely passed down through fucking colonialism and the, you know, and American media and, like, the West's media or whatever. Like, all this shit, anti-blackness, for sure, is, like, that's from fucking implicit American racism that people have picked up on. So it is one of those things where it's like, yo, you guys wanted a fucking global empire, then you have to take global blame for all this shit that you put in people's heads. I don't know. That's
So you're saying blame America.
People in
Ecuador treating you. I just love the way your brain works.
That's my focus. We just got to focus it back.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
My other favorite
thing. But I feel like I'm with you implicitly. I would do all of the things that we have just said and the caller said is like, in my heart, I'm like, ah.
Yeah.
But then it's like kind of paternalistic where you're like, ah, they don't know any better.
Well, like, I know. You have to resist the urge to be like, well, they just don't know. And it's like, no, I just don't know. Like, we just all maybe don't know. And I think about the cultural offenses, the invisible cultural offenses that I don't know that I'm doing when I'm somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that I'm not doing anything racist, but I could be doing something very offensive somewhere just because I haven't done enough research on where I'm going.
Right.
And I hope that I'm met with, you know, kindness and understanding to that. So,
I mean, this whole episode, we are kind of like getting close to one of the unspoken things about this show is that it, you know, for the title aside, it doesn't really matter if it's racist or not. Like, it's like we can hurt people in all kinds of ways and, like, maybe let's try to fucking do a little better, but also racism's everywhere.
Racism is everywhere.
That's true.
I liked, I found a gay bar in Japan, and when we walked in, all the guys just went, Obama!
Oh my
God. And I went, yeah, man. Like, I mean, I don't know what this interaction is, but it feels cool.
Yeah. It's so intense. Like, what are you supposed to do? Okay, let's do one last question.
Hey, so I'm a junior in high school, and we were just learning about the women's suffrage movement. Primarily first wave and second wave feminism. And at the end of it, we were asked, are you a feminist? And that question gave me pause. I've always considered myself a feminist. I am a feminist. But a lot of people in my class said that they weren't. I was just mulling over my head and I learned, oh, we didn't talk about what feminism is today. I believe feminism today is something very important and strong and really good. But the kids in my class have a different idea of what feminism is. And that kind of got me thinking about more things we've learned in the year. Like, we learned about the civil rights movement, but we didn't learn about what Black Lives Matter is. So to a lot of the people in my class, they absolutely support the civil rights movement, but they may say that the Black Lives Matter movement is not something that they can get behind. It's confusing to me that we kind of go over historically these big civil rights movements, but not really how they've manifested themselves in today. So can you go over that?
I mean, no, we can't. We're not going to go over
it. Not qualified.
But,
I mean, I just have a quick piece of advice for you. First of all, this is fantastic that you're making these connections. I didn't do this in high school.
This guy's.
I learned incredible. About the Lindbergh baby, and then I was like, I guess babies be getting stolen. Who knows That's what's going true, on today?
Though. Babies be getting stolen.
You're right. Mm-hmm. But God, a Lindbergh baby reference. What am I doing?
I loved it.
Get me out of here.
Save it for the show.
Get me out of here. What I would suggest to you, though, young scholar, is when you propose an assignment where you link these movements you're talking about to what's going on today, read bell hooks, read Ain't I a Woman, read about, you know, the next waves of feminism, read about current feminists, read Lindy West, read Roxane Gay, and connect. Propose your own project. Teachers love that shit when you go like, actually, I'd love to expand upon what we're learning. Sure.
Because your teachers are hungover and making
overworked,
like 30 grand a year.
They're upset. They have pressure from the fucking right-wing council in your town to not talk about Black Lives Matter movement or whatever. There's all kinds of shit going on in the teacher's lounge where some teacher wants to talk to you about this shit, but is being has pressure on them by some local fucking pastor. So anyway, propose this shit yourself and open up more people's minds in that class by doing your own independent project on it, and you will discover the links between these things, which we are not qualified to tell you about. Maybe Andrew is. Andrew went to a very good college.
I really want to hear Andrew make the connections between civil rights movement and Black Lives Matter.
Well, I think the key is actually, it's the thing that I think is the easiest way to actually study history, which is not something I was very good at, which is just like pick. And this is why this is actually a peek into the way my brain actually works. It's like, look, it is one of the joke conceits of this show, but it's also one of the true foundations of this country, which is like, look, everything's racist somehow. And here's why. You can always walk backwards in history. And the easiest way to do that is every time you read something written by someone, 99% of the time, they will either directly say or you can figure out who they were inspired by. And then read that, and then read that, and mm-hmm. you can keep walking backwards forever to yep. the fucking tablets or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
If you have to. You don't have to. You really shouldn't. It's boring. But
the tablets?
This kid's going all the way back to the tablets.
I'm just saying.
You asked about third wave feminism, and we give you Moses.
Yeah.
Have fun with your summer reading.
Or the cuneiform or whatever.
Tablets from the library.
But see, that's what I like about this kid is like, I agree. I would never draw comparisons like this, right? Like, I just didn't think like that for way too long.
No, fuck no. I was a straight-A student, but being a straight-A student oftentimes in public school, I assume this kid goes to public school, means that you are doing exactly what they've asked of you and maybe 4% more than that. Or you're just like, your eyes are just more alert when they're talking during class.
Yeah.
And that means that you are the best student in class. So doing this kind of critical thinking that takes you into today's moment is frankly necessary in schools, but probably beyond the limitations of what a lot of teachers are allowed to talk about these days. Yeah. So do it.
This guy's going to be like a governor in like 5 years.
I know.
Hell yeah.
Well, I will say he left like a bunch of voicemails. And usually when people leave a bunch, they're all like retaking the thing. But he actually left like 5 like really interesting ones. And this was maybe we'll revisit some of them. But yeah.
We could do a whole episode of this kid.
There's a real.
Bring him on the show.
Real thoughtful kid.
He's not a real high schooler, guys.
I hope it's just from the content farm. Because we needed some. No, but the other thing that kind of dovetailed with the earlier discussion is this idea of like jargon. Like it's this thing where I'm like, if this is old man Andrew's stepping up to the plate, if kids today, because of don't like the word feminist or whatever, largely I think the arguments for not liking feminism are garbage. However, you know, if the arguments are like, oh, well, feminists are just old sex negative white ladies from the 70s, then you start to see why lots of kids today would be like, well, that's not me. That's not what I believe in. Mm-hmm. I'm not a feminist, quote unquote. I don't know. And I am a person who's not like super wedded to jargon. Like, I think you can get the point across and like, and maybe I'm too quick to just give shit up. Is that fair?
What do you mean?
Like, I'm trying to think of another word that I'm fine with abandoning.
Oh, you mean like if people are like, I'm not a feminist, you're like, well, it's more important how you act and behave than...
Maybe.
You're rethinking.
As soon as you say that out loud, that sounds ludicrously stupid, but... Kind of.
I know what you're saying. I do think that sometimes people's, I think that it's, especially for young minds, sometimes the labels are helpful.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But
I,
you're a fucking feminist is the other thing.
Yeah.
To most of these kids.
Yeah. A lot of those kids are. They just don't know it because they don't realize that like the things they like about Cardi B make them a feminist.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
Because you haven't attached right. it to now.
Right, well, and there are people who are also feminists who would say things like, Cardi B's like not acting like a feminist because enough. She puts her... Yeah, yeah. Or like it's like being sex positive is anti... Feminists, whatever, it's an argument that's out there. I am not saying all women are like that. You get it. All feminists are like that. You guys get
if
it.
If there was just a BuzzFeed quiz that you could just click which Cardi B lyrics yeah. you liked, and then at the end it tells you if you're a feminist or not, uh-huh. then this will get solved.
I mean, I think the trick actually is a BuzzFeed thing that does that, but they're all like, you're a feminist, because guess what?
Unless, everybody's
unless you're
it.
A real fucking bigot.
Yeah.
You're a feminist. I don't know, kids. You're just a feminist. We're sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, whatever. Come up with your own term. Start a club at your school that is that term that basically exemplifies. I mean, because really what it boils down to is just like equal rights for all humans, regardless of whatever gender they are.
Yeah.
Like that. That's all it is. Yeah. So if you need, if this new young generation of kids needs newfangled words to accomplish that, great. Yeah.
Or the word feminist has been ruined. I mean, oh, you know, okay, here's one that I identify with that like is just like, ugh, I don't want to be part of these people is atheist, right? Like mm-hmm. I don't believe in any God. I don't really care though. I truly am just like, ugh.
But that word has become like Bill Maher.
Yeah, it yes. becomes a different thing. Yeah. Whereas like I so rarely think about religion or anything.
Right. right.
So I am by all on paper definitions an atheist, but I call myself an agnostic because it feels safer.
Right. Yeah. yeah. And yeah. I think maybe that's it. It's like, yeah. I'm not tied to the word atheist. I don't give a fuck. It's right. not yeah. going to make me believe in anything just because I don't like to say I'm an atheist because the actual people who are most vocal about being atheists are the worst.
Right.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah. It's mainly just like those people annoy me. I don't want to be part of them.
Yeah. They're yeah. ruining it for everybody else.
Yeah.
And you're in high school. You're good at steering clear of groups and cliques that seem lame. Yeah.
All right. Well, we did it.
We did it.
We did it.
Shit. Let's see. Jeff, two things. Well, one is if people want to cyberbully you in person, what's the best way they could do that? And tell them where they can, more importantly, see your work.
Absolutely. My handle on everything is at The Real Jeff Chan, so you can find me that way. There are many Jeff Chans out there, so
truly don't go look up our conversation. I'm very embarrassed about it.
Oh, Andrew, don't be embarrassed. This was really interesting.
You're not gonna be able to find it because I deleted all of my tweets. Your Hell tweets yeah. still exist. Hell so yeah. it just looks like you talking to yourself and
oh god,
calling nothing an Asian Uncle Tom, which you did call me.
Ooh, and, not great. No, ooh, not
you know,
great.
You didn't
Andrew.
Call me that. Your fans called me.
I
that.
Think I avoided that, but I definitely
and if you're listening now,
I definitely implied it.
Yeah, you definitely you led someone else to maybe say
that was not cool.
So yeah, I am The Real Jeff Chan. So the movie comes out on June 14th. This Friday on VOD, digital HD, and select theaters. So please check it out. It stars Maya Erskine and Jack Quaid, and was written and directed by myself and my good friend Andrew Reimer.
Yeah. I call him White Andrew, but whatever.
He's the other.
He could have any name he wants.
Oh, that's good. Does he like being called White Andrew?
He does not, but okay. he has a very good sense of humor about it.
So. Oh, man. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you
this
so
was
much.
Great, guys.
That was Jeff Chan.
Thank you to Jeff.
He was very funny and cool and charming.
Yeah.
I found myself like
what a charm, what a
little
a charm
bit.
Monster. I
a
fucking
total
hate that
charm
guy.
Monster. I was like, not even in a weird way. I was just like, what a charming young man.
Yeah.
I felt like my grandmother. It was a delightful chat.
No.
He has a winning smile.
When we go pitch together, it is like revolting. I'm just like, man, okay, I guess I just have to be the thirsty comic relief.
I mean, yeah, some thirst mixed with his charm. It's like you guys are like a perfect Southern sweet tea.
Oh, God. Anyway, go watch Plus One.
You know how you're still thirsty after you drink sweet tea? Because it's tea and it's dehydrating.
Bad for your teeth.
I just wanted to explain the joke more so that you guys Ultimately. Knew how good it was. Yeah, you guys are both bad for people's teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Plus One. Mm-hmm. Follow Jeff Chan. Mm-hmm. Follow us. Mm-hmm. Come to our shows.
Yep.
Philadelphia. There are still tickets. Come see us.
Yep.
7/18. That is July 18th. We are in Philadelphia for Yo, Is This Racist Live. You can also find us. First is Minneapolis. Correct. 7/23.
Yep.
Then 7/24, we're in Boston. We're doing a crazy zigzag pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets are on my website, tonynewsom.com/tour.
That's right. That's all there.
And if you want to see me in Brooklyn with Spontanea Nation and maybe with the kids at Super Ego, you can check me out there on 7/20 with Super Ego, maybe, and 7/21, Spontanea Nation with Paul F. Tompkins. We have two shows at 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock.
And then we have, also shows in September we're going north to south. It doesn't make a ton of sense how our travel works. It's Seattle, Portland, Frisco?
No, don't say it like that.
Fran Frisco?
Yeah, that's how it is.
Fran Frisco.
We go north to south the way that the starlings travel.
Good motherfucking
We travel God. Like a flock of beautiful migrating birds.
But yeah, for now, tonynewsom.com/tours is the best way to get links
That's
to
the That's the best way
tickets.
To get it. Get the ticket links. And if I messed one up or forgot it, I guess bother me about it.
It's on our Twitter.
It's on our Twitter.
At Yo, Is This Racist? You can find, we had to do a little one-on-one connecting people with ticket links in the DMs this week. And it is a pleasure.
It works. It works,
Get
you guys.
Get them ticks.
We also are going to have some new merch.
Oh my
for
God.
You. We're very excited.
The merch is phenomenal.
Guys, get
it
ready.
May have been designed by perhaps one of your favorite comedians and top 1% of whites.
Definitely top 1% of whites. Top 1% of, I would say, podcast hosts.
Yeah.
This is a top-notch designer. You didn't know he did graphic design on the side. He didn't know he did graphic design on the side.
Now he's doing it in the front.
But he sent us an image as a bit, and I said, I'm sorry, sir.
We're making this.
I'm using this. So come find out what that is about.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Brace your fucking selves.
Brace yourselves.
But that's it.
As always.
323-389-7223. That's 323-389-RACE. Leave a voicemail.
Leave a voicemail. Don't ask us to solve your problems on Twitter. We're just going to tell you to leave a voicemail.
I mean, just leave a voicemail.
Just leave a voicemail.
Leave a voicemail.
Just leave a voicemail. You guys have been doing great. They've been under a minute. They've been snappy. They've been complex. They've been weird. We love you for it.
We really do, most of you. Almost all of you.
Almost all of you, we love for it.
That's correct.
Bye.
Peace.